He taught that life insurance, and I'm telling you, he said some things in that life insurance class that I will never forget. And he taught it as buying life insurance. And he said, don't ever buy life insurance from somebody that doesn't belong to NAPA. Your first question of any agent that knocks on your door is, are you a member of your professional association? That was a great message to me. That was a great message. Then he said, I want to tell you, he came to class one day and he said, I want to tell you today about a career in life insurance. He said, I've been talking to you about the product of life insurance, and some of you will become actuaries, and some of you will become underwriters. But today I'm going to tell you about a career in the field as a life underwriter. Back in those days, that's what they called us, life underwriters. He said, I'm going to tell you about a career as a life underwriter. He said, let me start out by saying that the three greatest professions in the world are teaching, preaching, and the life insurance business. Well, all of us in class laughed. But then he said, you see, people buy cigarettes. He said, they have to be sold education. He said, people buy automobiles. They have to be sold religion. He said, people buy liquor. He said, they've got to be sold life insurance. The class got pretty quiet, pretty fast. You could tell this man was a believer in this great, great profession. So I wanted to start out by backing that up, that we all need to be members of NAPHA, and we do have a hurricane. I'm glad you used it that way. We got a flood coming at us, the worst we've ever seen, the scariest we've ever seen, ever. It's coming at us fast and furious, and we need people representing us up there. The next thing I want to do is I want to correct one little thing that was in your program. It said that in 2001 and 2003, I was the youngest man to ever qualify for the $1 million round table. I don't think that's exactly right. What it should have said was back in the 1950s, I was the youngest man to qualify for the $1 million round table from the state of Illinois. And then it should have also said that my brother and I both qualified for the $1 million round table in this century also, in 2001, 2003. But I want to be sure to make that little distinction. The other thing I want to say to you as I start out is I want to thank David McBride and National Life, because they've sponsored me being here for this great event. And I just want to give credit where credit is due, because David is the guy that's financed me to come here and be with you today. And so I appreciate that. Also, as I start out, we're in the midst of, you know, we hear a lot about politics these days, probably more than a lot of us want to hear. But I'm reminded of one of the greatest politicians that ever lived, Winston Churchill. Dr. Billy Graham said that he felt that Winston Churchill was one of the greatest leaders since the Apostle Paul. Winston Churchill and Abraham Lincoln, said Dr. Billy Graham, two of the greatest leaders since the Apostle Paul. Winston Churchill, like Lincoln, both had humor. And in fact, I read a little book called The Wit and Wisdom of Sir Winston Churchill. And when things got going tough in England, he was always voted into office. When it was peacetime and they're out of war, he voted out of office. Because he was controversial. Because he said it like it was, and then he lived it like he said it. That's why he was such a great leader. Those are the great salespeople. The salespeople that say it like it is, and then live it like you say it. That's the great salespeople. Winston Churchill was known to imbibe in a little wine, and he was at a big, huge banquet, the biggest banquet in London, England. And, you know, everybody that was anybody was there. And he had a lot of people that didn't like him, and he didn't like them. And one of them was Lady Astor. And they fought each other publicly. They fought each other in the newspapers. And when this banquet, the smoke cleared and the banquet started, up at the head table, seated next to one another, were Winston Churchill and Lady Astor. Nobody, they said, nobody watched the podium. They were watching what was going to break out over here somewhere during the dinner. Well, about midway through the dinner, Sir Winston took a look at Lady Esther and he said, "Boy, you are ugly." She said, "Sir Winston, you are drunk." He said, "Tomorrow morning, I'll be sober." The wit and wisdom of Sir Winston. The story is also told about, you know, Putin from Russia and this nut from Iran that Joseph talked about. And Obama were having a meeting. And they were, of course, talking through interpreters. And the guy from Russia, he said, "You know, Putin," he said, I am the greatest leader of all time." And the guy from Iran, he said, "Oh, no. He said, "I am the greatest leader of all time." He said, "In fact, God Almighty appointed me to be the leader of all people everywhere." President Obama said, "I never told you any such thing." So we want to keep our humor when the flood's coming at us. But we want to be aware of that flood. We want to be aware of that flood. And so as I start out here today, before I get to the professional presentation that I'm going to give you, I brought a few things with me that I just wanted to share with you at random. I think they're very important for a meeting of this kind. I'm going to start out way back in the 30s and move back up. This afternoon I'm going to talk a little bit about how to sell life insurance in a down market. But when I was born into this country, the Dow was at 84. Just recovering from the stock market crash, the Dow was at 84. And I got this information from the Cracker Barrel. My oldest daughter, who's a CPA, she bought these at the Cracker Barrel and gave them to me, the things that happened, you know, the things that happened on your birth date and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, the annual income when I was born into this country was $1,555 a year. Car cost you $5.50 and a brand new home cost you $5,700. Gallon of gasoline cost you 10 cents. But here's the thing I want you to hear. When I was born into this world, I was expected to live. My life expectancy was 59.7. I've outlived that just a little. But that was the life expectancy back when I was born. Fast forward when I graduated from high school. The income had soared up to $3,500. Gasoline was up to 19 cents. But here's what I want you to hear. People born that year were expected to live to be 68. Things change. Expected to live 68. Fast forward to the year I graduated from college. A new home was now worth $10,950. And the average income when I started in this business was $4,000 a year. Now, what I had to sell when I woke up every day, 1955, 56, 57, 58, 59, right on up until the 70s, when I woke up every day, I had one policy I could sell. You know what it was? Whole life. In fact, I had three policies. Whole life, and whole life. That's what I had to sell. Whole life to 100, whole life to 65, and 20 pay life. That's what I had in my portfolio. Now, I got a rate book for every age. Now, remember, no computers, so I got a manual rate book. And you were told to take good care of it because we're going to put these out about every 5 years. You know, now they change the rates every 5 minutes. Back then, they said, now, they didn't be too careful, don't lose this, because you know, you're going to have to keep that for 5 years. And so I started looking through it a little bit and studying it and all that. I had these pages that were torn out. So I went to my manager. Jack and I had the same manager, naturally, in Central Illinois. He was the first man ever inducted. He was the first GA ever inducted into the GA Hall of Fame, the Gamma Hall of Fame, Fred G. Holderman. And I noticed there were some pages torn out of my rate book. So I called Mr. Holderman on the phone and said, "I got a rate book that something's wrong with. It's a used rate book." I said, "Somebody tore the pages out." He said, "No, they're not. That's okay." He said, "Those pages are term insurance." And we don't want you selling any term insurance. You get out there and sell whole life. That's what people need. That's what people want. And that's what you're going to sell. Well, that's what I sold. That's what I sold. I sold whole life. So I got up every day and I had one type of policy to sell every day. That was whole life. Now, times change, don't they? Do times change? Times change. Things change. The mortality has changed. Things change. But there's one thing that never changes, and that's the sales process. That's the sales process. The sales process doesn't change. The methodology has changed. We're using the computer. We're using things we didn't have available when I started and when Guy started in the business. We're using things that were not available back then. So times change, but the selling process does not change. And so I'm going to relate to that this afternoon when I get together with you in the breakout. But I want to share one. I'm not changing subjects on you, but I told you I had some things I wanted to share with you at random. Here's an article. Here's an article in the Wall Street Journal online, March 25th this year. March 25th this year. The title of the article was "Fusty Insurance Lures Buyers Seeking Safety." The first sentence says, "As the economy sinks, a growing number of Americans are turning to a stodgy financial product favored by their parents and grandparents, and the name of the product is whole life insurance." Then he goes on, this editor goes on to talk about some people that have bought whole life insurance recently. One was a lady by the name of Lynn Mason, 32-year-old bond seller in Larchmont, New York. She recently purchased a whole life policy for more than $200,000. From a company well represented in this room. She is single. She says she made the purchase knowing that many financial experts don't recommend life insurance for individuals without dependents, though she helps support her parents and brother. "I know I'm young, and it's not the traditional thing to do, and it goes against investment advisors' recommendations," says Ms. Mason. "But we are in a new world in terms of overall market conditions." She also owns some stocks and she owns some bonds. Then it talks about three of the major companies represented in this room that are up this year in whole life sales. One's up 11%, another's up 16%, another's up 13%. And that's whole life sales in those major companies up. Then it says Lou Coomer, and this is the bottom line of the article as far as I'm concerned. Lou Coomer, 39, a cardiologist in Arlington, Virginia, says he probably wouldn't have given whole life a second look a few years ago when stocks were rising. But since then, he saw his mother's retirement plan shrink just as she was about to need it. Dr. Coomer says it made him worry about his own wife and children and his ability to provide for them if he should die during a down market. He also owns mutual funds and real estate. Dr. Coomer says that he acknowledges that many of his friends weren't with him. They were against him. They weren't convinced as he was, telling him he should buy term and invest the difference. Did you ever hear that before? Buy term, invest the difference. I'll come back to that one. He is paying a hefty $4,300 a month in premium. He bought a 2 million whole life with a 1 million rider. He says, "I like because it gives me protection and it also gives me a savings account." Now, if you say that, you're in jail. Compliance throws you right in jail because you use the word savings. But this doctor said, "I've got protection and I've got savings." Under the terms of his customized plan, he is scheduled to stop paying premiums at age 55. He started at age 39, is that right? Scheduled to stop paying premiums at 55 for lifetime protection. He has a $2 million whole life and a 1 million term rider. That was not enough for me. The company that he bought it from is a client, and so of mine. And so I went to an agent in that company. And I said, I'd like you to run me $2 million whole life, 39 years old, paid up at 55, customized, paid up at 55, with a million term rider. I want to look at it. So I went out and looked at it. At 56 years of age, when his policy is now fully paid up, not by dividends, paid up according to the contract, paid up, he has $1,211,000 in cash value. He has $2,700,000, the term rider's gone. He has $2,700,000 in paid up life insurance. I fast forwarded it to where he was my age. When he goes to be my, and when he gets out to be my age, he has $3,700,000 in cash value. He has $5 million in face amount. Now let's get the picture here, folks. Let's get the picture. This is what you're out there selling every day. And it ought to be sold just this way. You plunk down $4,300 a month. Instantly, miraculously, my company will create an estate for you of $3 million. And you can never pay in $3 million. Impossible. The fact of the matter is, the most you can ever pay in contractually is $850,000. And my company instantly creates for you a $3 million estate. And when you get out there at 55, 56, and it's all over, your premium paid, your policy's paid up, you get a policy that's worth $1.2 million in cash, and it's worth $2.7 million in face amount. And it just keeps growing every year. Is that right? Just keeps growing every year. Now, I'm out there at that age, folks, when I see my policies growing every year. Guaranteed. And when that face amount comes in, or I ever borrow out of that policy, I borrow it out how? Tax free. Now, folks, do you know what we're selling? You plunk down $4,300, you state for $3 million, and you can never pay in the face amount. Is this a great product? And I'm not talking this way because the stock market's down. I talked this way 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago. Now, do I own some variable life? Yes. I was on the committee with the company that created it. Yes, do I own variable life? Cost me a lot of headaches. And I've gotten a few of those letters that say, if you don't get this in here in the next 30 days, you know, your policy is going to lapse. Do I have some UL? Yeah, I have some UL. I have some guaranteed UL to 121. I have some of that stuff. But I want to tell you something. I'm like old Dale Carnegie told Frank Betcher. He said to his insurance agent, Frank Betcher, my life insurance has never caused me a headache. You know, I've never waked up in the middle of the night and worried about my life insurance, my whole life. I never have. Now, I do worry sometimes about variable. I do worry. I did have to worry in the last commercial downturn of commercial real estate. My brother and I own our building we're in. And it's rented out and all that, but we had a $6 million building with a $4 million loan. But then all of a sudden, it was worth $2 million, and we owed $4 million. That's a problem serious in nature. And when the banker calls, he wants what? His money. He wants his money. Now, we worked with the bank and worked it all out. It's flip-flopped back the other way now again. But what I'm saying to you is that caused me a lot of headaches. I put a lot of hours into reworking that loan with that bank. And so my life insurance has never caused me any problems. Do you own enough permanent life insurance? Do you own it till it hurts up to here? Because if you do, then when somebody says to you, well, I can't afford that right now, I'm the same way, I can't either. But let me show you what I've done. And let me show you how mine works. And let me show you why I bought it. That's calling sell what you own. Sell what you own. So that's the story of the Wall Street Journal, out of the Wall Street Journal. Then, at random, I bring you this. I have a fella that I went to college with, fraternity brother. He was a couple of years younger than me. I recruited him to the Phi Gamma Delta fraternity there in Illinois Wesleyan. After school, I was single. He was a town guy. He lived in Bloomington. I was from over there in Pekin. He lived in Bloomington, and his mother rented out some rooms. I rented a room from his mother, lived with him. He was in one room, I was in the other. And he came to me at about a senior in college, and said he wanted to be a minister. But he said, I don't know how I can finance my way to seminary. I said, well, Ron, let me tell you something. You and I are friends, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to finance you one-third of the way. Tomorrow morning, I want you to go down and see Dr. Martin. That was his pastor and my pastor. And I said, I want you to tell Dr. Martin what you've decided to do and tell him you want the church to finance the other third, another third. That gives you two-thirds, and you pay a third. How's that sound? You work and pay a third. He said, sounds good. So I helped him get through school. Living at his house, I also sold him a lot of policies, particularly in the heat of a campaign. I knew I always had two policies sold, one on him, one on me, as we started the campaign, those life campaigns. He sends me stuff two and three times a week. He recently sent me this, August 21st. He said, rules from God. These are rules from God. Wake up! Decide to have a good day. Today is the day that the Lord hath made. And then he gives you the scripture. Today is the day the Lord hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Number two, dress up. Dress like a professional. Look like a person that needs to be doing giving financial advice. Dress up. Dress up. The best way to dress up is put on a smile. A smile is an inexpensive way to improve your looks. The Lord does not look at the things man look at. Man looks at outward appearance, but the Lord looks at your heart. Do you have a heart with a smile? Is Stan Benfeld in here? He's outside. Yeah. Stan, I've probably known longer than anybody in this audience, and I saw him, had a nice visit with him this morning. He's a great guy. But the thing I like about Stan, number one, he's got a lot of integrity, but number two, he's got a smile. He's out there, got his hand in a cuff, can't walk, walking with a cane, got a smile on his face. Smile on his face. Smile. Dress up. Shut up. Boy, I'd like to tell like a lot of new agents, shut up. You've already sold the policy. You can get the clothes in here pretty quickly. Shut up. Say nice things and learn to listen. Say nice things, learn to listen. God gave us 2 ears, 1 mouth. You've heard that. So he meant for us to do a lot of listening. He who guards his lips guards his soul. Proverbs 13:3. Stand up. Stand up for what you believe in. Stand up for what you believe in. Stand for something or you'll fall for anything. And then the scripture is, let us not be weary in doing good. For at the proper time, we'll reap the harvest we do not, so we'll reap the harvest we sow. Therefore, we have an opportunity. Let us do good. Number five, look up. Look up. Look up to the Lord. I can do everything through Christ which strengthens me. Reach up. Reach up. Number six, reach up for something higher. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him and He'll direct your path. Number seven, and finally, lift up. Lift up your prayers. Do not worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Philippians 4:6. So that's at random. Here's another thing, Guy, you'll like. Here are the recent MDRT averages. I know you got that at the recent MDRT meeting. Average lies, 172. Average commission, $1,188. Average commission per life case. Average member commissions, and I assume that's MDRT commissions, that's $195 and $195,333. That's now the average of the MDRT. I can remember the days, not too long ago, in recent years, that was below 100. It's now up to 195. So, as Guy said yesterday, qualify for the $1 million round table and go to the meeting. It's the greatest event you'll probably ever attend in your lifetime. Now I want to tell you two Olympic stories, and then we'll get down to the business at hand. But we can learn from this. The first one is given to me by Larry Hunt. Where is Larry sitting? Larry's probably out there with Stan. No, I'm serious, because he was talking to Stan. Larry Hunt's not in here? Okay, Larry Hunt started in the business in July of this year. He came up, shook my hand, and said, I've been learning all your stuff. Been reading all your stuff. My company uses all your stuff. I've been learning. I wanted to come by and meet you and shake your hand. And I don't know how we got talking about, but Stan knew that I have an athletic background and that I love athletics. Love to watch it, love to be around it. And he said, I was talking about Dan and Dave. Dan and Dave. Anybody here know who Dan and Dave was? Who was Dan and Dave? Pardon me? Decathlon. Decathlon guys. Decathlon guys. Reebok spent millions on them. Dan and Dave. 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 Only one problem. Neither Dan and Dave made the Olympic team. And Reebok spent millions on Dan and Dave. Dan and Dave. Dan and Dave. Then, 4 years later, Dan won the gold medal in the decathlon. This guy, Larry Hunt, who just started with the Foreign Bureau here in July, he told me out there, he said, I said, I want to tell you this story because I've been telling this story on a long time. And I just want to verify that I've got my facts right. He said, well, I coached Dan in high school. So I was his high school coach. I was the guy that, when he was a freshman, advised him to start training in the pole vault. So when the pole vault being the toughest event in the decathlon. He said, so when it came time for him to be a decathlon athlete, he already had the pole down. I said, well, here's the story that I've heard. I want you to verify it. He verified it. He verified these facts. I said, at one point in time, he was on ESPN News, and the guy interviewing him said to him, Dan, 4 years ago, you didn't even make the team. Now, 4 years later, you won the gold medal, and you're a hero. What was the difference? Well, he said, I went to the Visa school. And so the announcer said, what in the world's a Visa school? He said, well, Visa sponsored an event. And Larry gave me some information on that event. And an Olympic champion by the name of Milt Campbell started the event. And at the event that Dan Bryan attended, there was Bruce Jenner was there, Bob Mathias was there, Rafer Johnson was there, and Milt Campbell was the master of ceremonies. And he said, I went to the Visa camp. He said, what do you mean you went to the Visa camp? The announcer said, what do you mean you went to the Visa camp? He said, well, I went to the Visa camp where they train people that want to be Olympic champions. Well, he said, how'd that change your life? He said, well, when we got there, he said, the very first day, crack out of the box, the guy in charge says, if you've got some goals, if you've got Olympic goals, stand up. And he said, most everybody in the room stood up. He said, now if you haven't been writing, you can remain standing. And he said, about 50% of the crowd remained standing. He said, if you got goals and you got them in writing and you got them with you, remain standing. He said, two of us standing. And he said, that's what changed my life. That guy said, mistake number one, you don't have your goals, you don't have them in writing, and you don't have them with you. Do you have your goals? Do you have them in writing? Do you have them with you? Everywhere you go? Think and grow rich, did I hear that mentioned this morning? What Think and Grow Rich say that for you to do? Did you do what it told you to do? Put those goals on cards and do what? Carry them with you everywhere you go. Carry them with you everywhere you go. Well, I immediately called Bob Richards on the phone and said, you know all about this stuff? He said, oh, yeah, it's one of the greatest training facilities there is for Olympic champions. So Dan went on to be a great Olympic champion. And so Larry said, well, let me give you the rest of the story. Let me give you the rest of the story because you're all the way there except for one little thing. He said, Dan told me that after that meeting, He went back to his hotel room. And he said what had never been accomplished in the Olympics or ever was 9,000 points in the decathlon. And the guy up the front said that. So he went back to his room and he wrote down on a sheet of paper 9,000 points. Now Larry said he didn't reach it, but he almost reached it and became Olympic champion. 9,000 points. Most of you in here are too young to remember Bruce Jenner, but Bruce Jenner was at that meeting. Visa sponsored it and brought in all these Olympic champions to have a surge in the Olympics for the U.S. And they brought in all these. Bruce Jenner, when he won the decathlon, he had in every track shoe he owned, he had what he had to do in every race to win the gold medal. Now, when he decided to do that was when he was sitting in the stands with his U.S. uniform on, and he watched them go out there and get the gold, the silver, and the bronze. And he said to himself, 4 years from today, that's going to be me. He went back to Iowa, and he wrote out his goals, what he had to do in each of the events to win the gold medal. Put that in every track shoe he had, pinned it on every place in his house, every mirror, on the refrigerator, and listen to this one, almost like Dan, only slightly back, to the quarter of an inch and to the tenth of a second, he hit every record that he had to do to win the gold medal. And naturally, the rest is history. He won the gold medal. Do you own enough permanent life insurance? Question number one. Question number two, do you have your goals? Are they in writing? And are they here with you today? Look at them every day. Give it everything you got, every gut in your body. I heard one of your presenters talk about his wife practicing her swimming. We put out a Monday morning message every Monday morning. If you're not getting that message, be sure to fill out the form you have in the back of your outline. I'm getting ready here in about 2 minutes to go into this outline, and I trust everybody has this in front of them. Is there anybody here that does not have this? Blueprint for Financial Success. Everybody should have that in front of them. On the back of that handout is a order form where you can order some materials from Kinder Brothers. But whether you want to order them or whether you don't, put your email on there, and every Monday morning you will get an email message from the Kinder Brothers. Every Monday morning, like clockwork, you'll get an email message from the Kinder Brothers. Here's the one that we put out a year ago, almost 12 months ago right now. Finish strong. The board beside the pool where Michael Phelps and his teammates trained bore this message up there on the wall, the swim pool where he trained. In business, words are words, explanations are explanations, promises are promises, only performance is reality. Now, if you've been to any Kinder management meeting, you know that is a Kinder saying, right? Words are words, explanations are explanations, excuses are excuses, only performance is reality. So that gave me a signal that maybe his coach had read our book, 21st Century Positioning, because that's in there, word for word. Then I got really convinced that he had read the book, because it said, Coach Bowman, his coaching philosophy revolves around these words. And it also says here that he is somewhat a student of success literature. He's a student of success literature. And he says, this is the reoccurring theme and direction of my coaching. Successful people form the habits of doing the things failing people don't like to do. Now, how old is that? That's 1940, Albert Ian Gray. Every book we've ever written, we put that in there. Successful people form the habits of doing the things failing people don't like to do. What is it failing swimmers don't like to do? They don't like to practice 4 a.m. in the morning for 3 hours. Go to school. Get up, go back in the afternoon. Practice 4 more hours. Go home, eat dinner, do their homework. Get up at 4 a.m., go practice. Can't you see Coach Bowman saying that to Phelps? Successful people form the habits of doing the things failing people don't like to do. Michael, successful swimmers, they do the things failing swimmers don't like to do, and the failing swimmers don't like to train. What is it failing students in college don't like to do? Study. What is it failing agents, not the people in this room, the failing agents, what is it they don't like to do? They don't like to prospect and make phone calls. They don't like to contact people. Tell them they'd like to get together with them. But the successful people do it. Now, do they do it because they love it? No, most people can't stand it. Do you like getting on that telephone? Dial, 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 dial. I'm not interested in insurance. Don't like insurance. Don't like your company. Quit calling. Boy, I love to do that. Let me do it again. Most people can't stand that. Is that right? That's his reoccurring coaching theme. Finish strong. So I wanted to share those things at random with you. And now I'm ready to go through your outline. Here is a selling idea, selling methodology that we've used virtually all of our lives. We've perfected it and perfected it and perfected it. This selling methodology has been through compliance at New York Life, been through compliance at John Hancock, been through compliance at National Life, been through compliance at Farm Bureau. I hope I haven't left anybody out. But so it's been through several compliance companies, parts of the company, department, through the compliance department. Now, what we sent in and what came back sometimes didn't resemble one another. But it still got through there with the language and with the pictures. And so I want to go through it with you because, to me, it's a great way to sell permanent life insurance to Mr. and Mrs. Middle America. Now, when I say Mr. and Mrs. Middle America, I'm talking about people that are earning up to 150, people that are between the ages of 20 and say 50. This is a tremendous selling tool. Now, in the book we have out there called Story Selling, it says it is best if you sell with stories. It is best if you sell with pictures. And then in the book, Story Selling, they did research. The guy was on the MDRT in 2003 at Las Vegas with the stories from the main platform. And he and his buddies did some research on this. They put people in a room, and they found out that when they started feeding them statistics a mile a minute, that the left side of the brain went off with electrical activity. But the right side of the brain went 100% to sleep. Now, it's the right side of the brain that makes decisions. It's the decision maker. It's the mover. The left side of the brain is the analyzer. And so when you show a person a computer printout with all those statistics, what side of the brain are you shutting down? You're shutting down the brain they're going to make a decision with. Is it any wonder, well, you've given me a lot to think about here. Mark, let me think about this. Let me think about it. He doesn't want to think about it. He's confused by those statistics. Confused buyers don't buy. In the book Story Selling, says you ought to sell with stories. You ought to sell with pictures. And so the research, they started throwing up there with these people in the room with the electrodes up, they started throwing up pictures. They started telling stories. They started using metaphors. And all of a sudden, the right side of the brain lit up with phenomenal electricity, electrodes. And so Paul Harvey would say the rest of the story is the left side remained in full alert. So when you tell a story, you draw a picture, everything, every part of that brain is awake and ready to go to work for you. So you sell with pictures. You sell with stories. You sell with concepts. You know all these figures that I read out of this company's computer printout. You know all the statistics. This is the premium. This is the coverage. This is your cash value. You got that memorized. And I know in today's world you got to have that sign, right? But you don't sell with it. You don't sell with it. You know those numbers I gave you? Here's the form where we got them. right off this form where we got all those numbers. I've been sharing with you. See, there's one right there, and there's one right there. See, and I need you to sign this. So you sell with pictures, you sell with stories. So I've been drawing this picture in front of people for years. Your future is our focus. Now here's a typical American, middle America. 60,000 household, 60,000 of income. Let's pretend that's income on one person in the household. And on the right, there's another example too, 90,000. So what we say to the people, first of all, is that we need to know your gross income. We need to talk about your Social Security and taxes. And then you get your net business income. Then notice, Mr. Prospect, that we got the family financial accumulation layer. The family financial accumulation layer. This is where you accumulate money. 4 boxes. This is where everybody in America accumulates money. 4 boxes. And we're going to talk about your family accumulation layer. Then we'll talk about your expenses. Many of you in here are multi-line. On the left-hand side, you under family expenses, you got medical expenses, and on the right-hand side, you got P&C insurance. That's the foundation. Notice in the family financial accumulation later, there's 2 foundations. And one of them is what? Emergency savings. The other one way over here to the right, the one way over here to the right says permanent life insurance. Permanent life insurance. So we always start out talking about permanent life insurance. Now, let's take a look at your situation. May I ask what your gross income is? May I ask what you're putting into, what your paycheck look like after you get through income tax and Social Security? Then I'll ask them, by the way, how much of that $11,000, do you see this up here, right here? How much of that $11,000, how much of this $18,000 is made up of Social Security? Anybody in here answer that? Who wants to take a crack at it? How much? No. I don't want a percentage. I want the money. Now go ahead. 7 what? 7%. Let's round it off. 7% of gross, right? 7%. 7% of 60,000 is what? 42. Now that's not exactly right, Mr. Prospect. Because your employer's matching. You got $8,400 going into Washington every year for Social Security. Do you know how it works? No. Ain't going to be there when I get there anyway. Time out. Yeah, it is going to be there. And then I go into the explanation of Social Security, because I'm going to come back to that later. Because that's, for most Americans, term insurance. If they're earning $90,000 a year, if that person in that household, one person in that household, earning $90,000, their Social Security is almost $40,000 a year to the survivors if they leave a widow and 2 children. $40,000 a year. They got a child age 2, that's 16 years. You take 40,000 times 16, they got almost 500,000 of what? Term insurance. They got group insurance where they work. Many of them got 2 times. That's another form of what? Term insurance. Don't poo-poo Social Security and show them all the term insurance they've got. This is excellent play for worksite marketing. Excellent. Compliance likes it because the script's right there, and they like to know what the script is that's going along with all this, right? That's one thing compliance loves to see. So we got your net income. We determine your net income. Now here's your family accumulation layer. Please notice the 2 pillars. I'm role-playing here with you. Please notice the 2 layers. The one on the left is emergency savings. Now let me tell you an interesting story, Mr. Prospect, and see if any of you have ever used this story, and if you used it, are you still using it, and if you're not using it, why aren't you using it? Pretty good question. How many in a year have used this story for every 100 people starting their career at age 25 by the time the filing will occur? Let me see your hands. How many have you used it? All right. Now, pardon me. I say, when I'm in front of salespeople like you, and I'm talking to them eyeball to eyeball. I say to them, on every middle American, on every one of your Mr. and Mrs. Middle America prospects, you use this. And I talk to young people a lot, and I say, where's that young fellow there right there? You use this every time, without exception. Every time, without exception. For every 100 people starting to career at age 25, by the time they're 65, the following will have occurred. 13 will be dead. 10 will be dead broke. 10 will be dead, 13, I'm sorry, 13 will be dead, 10 will be dead broke. Now, if 13 are dead by the time they're 65, how many are alive? Come on, how many are alive? 87. Hey, listen, 87 are alive. I want to tell you something. At my age, with my 55 years of experience in the insurance business, I'm more concerned about the ones, the 87, than I am the 13. Because the ones that are 80, the 87 live to 65, they got a serious problem. You talk about that flood that's coming, that hurricane that's coming. They've never had a model of people living out to 100. You know, when I reach 65, you're expected to live to 68. Today, person reached 65, they're expected to live. 44% of them, listen to this, 44% of them expect to live to 95. They got life insurance problems when they get out there. They've got asset problems when they get out there. 10 will be dead, broke. 65 will just barely be getting by. 12 and only 12 will be somewhat okay in the richest land in the history of civilization. Mr. Prospect, would you like to know why that is? Now, you've all used this that raised your hands. And what comes next? These people didn't what? Plan to fail. They just what? Failed to plan. How often are you going to use this? Every time. Word for word. Don't vary one word. 10 will be, 13 will be broke, 10 will be dead broke. Don't vary a word. These people didn't plan to fail. They just failed to plan. Now, there's only two types of people in this world, Mr. Prospect, financially. Only two types of people. What are they? Those that what? Spend first, and those that you talked about. Our friend from Toledo, John Savage, he wore this out. He wore this out. Spend first, save first, spend last. Now, to this point in time, look in the prospect square in the eye, which have you been? What are they going to say most of the time? Spend first. Which would you rather be? Save first. I'm glad you said that. Because that's the only kind of people I can work with. Those that want to save first. Now, once in a while, you'll get people say, well, I can't say, well, I'm up to here, I'm insurance poor, I want to buy term vested here. I see you're driving a Mercedes. Why don't you buy a Volkswagen and invest the difference? What in the world does buying life insurance have to do with investing? I was doing a meeting just a couple weeks ago. I opened it up for questions. This young kid, brand new in the business, he said, how do you get people to see that this is an investment? I said, this is not an investment. This is life insurance. It does things no other form, no other financial product can do. You keep them separate. This is life insurance. I'm glad you said that because, you see, I can't work with anybody that isn't going to save first. So the desire is to save first and spend last. Now, the first thing we got to do is take care of this emergency. Now, check the box here, Mr. Prospect. Check the box. How much do you have in emergency right now? Not for Christmas, not for vacation, not for birthdays. For real live emergencies. How much do you have set aside right now? By the way, don't answer this out loud, but in this crowd, how much do you have set aside? For emergency only. Emergency only. You have things happen to you like happened to a guy in 1986. Hey, do you have an emergency? Do you have an emergency fund? You're going to have sometimes something's going to happen. You're going to have, so I haven't checked the box. Now, which box do they check? Most Americans up to age 50, 55. What box do they check? Either the first or the second, is that right? Now, then the next question is, how much do the experts say you ought to have in emergency savings? 6 months. All right? And that's one question. I've asked it. I'm not exaggerating with you now. I've asked that question thousands of times in my career. Thousands of times. And they're always going to say 3 to 6 months. I mean, they're going to give you that's one question they know the answer. I don't know why. But they know the answer to that question. So I say, now, that means on 90,000 that we need somewhere between 30 and 45. So why don't you and I make an agreement that we're going to help you get $30,000 in emergency funds? And I'll show you how we're going to do that. Now, Guy, you remember John, he used to use the circles. It's five circles. We've got four boxes. Four boxes. And so I'm going to help you get money in that emergency box. I'm going to have you write a check into a separate account every day. Every week into a separate account. Every paycheck. We're going to take part and put it in a separate account because we're going to build up the emergency savings. Now, that's the first pillar. Need 3 to 6 months gross income in this account. Now, there's three types of life insurance. Now, let me tell you why I got three types of life insurance up there. The next question in the script is this. May I ask you, with what companies do you own your personal permanent life insurance? I've asked that over 1,000 times. The answer, a lot of the time, what do you mean? Permanent. Exactly what I want them to say. Exactly what. What do you mean, permanent? Now, you want one more statistic? This is LIMRA. 66% of Americans own no personal life insurance. And a third of the ones that buy today, this is LIMRA, a third of the ones that buy today buy term only. Now, here's the problem. Nobody buys life insurance. Usually it's what? Sold. So they aren't buying it, we're selling it. Because we're not taking the time to educate people on the value of permanent life insurance and an emergency savings in a separate account. I did this with a stewardess on my way from Dallas, Texas up to Canada. She said, are you in the insurance business? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, did you ever hear of A.L. Williams? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, can you tell me about him? Nothing. Can't tell you anything because I don't want to speak bad of anything. So I'm not going to tell you anything. I said, why do you ask? Because she said, my cousin's with A.L. Williams. And he wants to sell me some life insurance. I'm confused. I said, well, when you get done serving, come back. My wife was sitting right here next to me. I was right on the aisle. My wife's sitting right here. I said, when you get done, you come back. I'll tell you what you ought to do. I took her through this in about 5 minutes. I can get through this in 8 minutes. I can get through this in 8 minutes. I took her through this. When I got all done, you know what she said? Why don't all life insurance people talk like this? Why don't they talk like this? This is easy to understand. You want me to have an emergency? And I used John Savage's circles on the airplane. I drew circles for her. And I said, this is where you put your money. Emergency savings. Now, there's three types of life insurance. Group insurance, employer controlled, term insurance, can change any time. By the way, when I'm going through this, facial expressions, employer controlled, and it's term insurance. Never going to pay off. Term insurance. Can change any time. Disappears when you leave the employment or when you retire. Now, the second type of term insurance you got is Social Security. This is if they're married, got a couple of kids. You got Social Security. Government controlled, and it's what kind? Term insurance. May or may not pay off. If you live, it's gone. The life insurance portion. Can change any time. Disappears when the youngest child is 18, reappears for the spouse at 62. Now, permanent life insurance is personally controlled. It's permanent insurance. You control the changes. Should never disappear as long as you continue to pay the premiums. Now, that was built that way and said that way for compliance. And that they accept that. Most every compliance department accepts that. It's personal. You see, you got two buckets leaking. When you get over here and start buying personal insurance, don't buy one that leaks. You already got two leaking. Buy something that fills up, that's there when you need it. And 87 of them are going to need it. They're going to need it on the other end. And they got group and Social Security on this end. Now, do I use blended insurance for some young couples? Sure you do. Yeah, but try to get permanent in every home. So that's those two pillars. Then you have qualified plans. Let me ask you, Mr. Prospect, how much are you putting in your qualified plans? I'm talking about 401ks. I'm talking about IRAs. How much are you putting in? So you go over that story. I had a young couple that their parents wanted me to talk to them about finances. And so I went through this with him, got to this point. And I said, Scotty, how much are you putting into qualified plan? He said, well, I'm putting 8%. I said, 8%? Why are you putting in that? He said, well, it's deductible. I said, well, that sounds good. Why are you putting in 8? He said, well, the company matches 3, so I put in 3 and 3 is 6. I put in 2 more to make it 8. I said, well, go ahead and keep putting into the match, but tomorrow morning you're going into the HR department, and you know what you're going to do? You're going to drop that 2% instantly. You have no emergency savings, you have no permanent life insurance, and you're putting in money into a qualified plan. Have you been listening to Dave Ramsey? Have you been listening to Susie Orman? You've been listening to the wrong people. You've been listening to the wrong people. That's idiotic. And it is. You got young people, 25, 26 years old, putting money, extra money into a 401k, don't have any permanent, don't have any emergency savings, no permanent life insurance. What kind of a plan is that? Because if they, hey, do people pull out money right now out of their qualified plan? If you had any people pull it out, what do you tell them? Don't, because it's what? Taxed and what?
Penalized.
And they're pulling out right when the market's down. But what do they say? I don't care. Gotta have them. Gotta have them. Now, I was preaching this when the stock market was up there pounding the door on 14. 9 qualified plans. I asked Scott, he doing anything qualified plan? Non-qualified, I mean, that's annuities. That's stocks and bonds. And he do anything like that? He said, well, we're trying to put 100 a month into it. We've got an account at Merrill Lynch. We're putting 100 a month in there, trying to build up some stocks. I said, Scotty, do you know when we're going to stop that? He said, yeah, tomorrow morning. I said, you got it right. Tomorrow morning, that stops. You have no emergency savings, no permanent life insurance. You're putting money in stocks. You're going at this thing backwards. College costs are escalating annually. Determine how much to set aside. You can have qualified, non-qualified, as you know. Then learn to live on 60 to 70% of your gross income. If the people are earning above 100, I try to get them to see they ought to learn to live on 40 to 50% of their gross. With the tax situation that's coming like a flood upon us right now, not just in the insurance world, I saw, where is the guy that was president of NAFA that made the speech? Chuck. Where'd Chuck go? He's out there talking to Stan. But I saw just the other day that they also have a deal in there to tax health benefits. Not only life insurance benefits, health benefits. Not only life insurance build up, they got all kinds of screwy things in there right now. So you got to learn to live, and this guy's got to learn to live on 60 to 70%. So most people need to learn to live on some, if they're making over 100, some of them got to learn to live on 40, 50% of gross income. If I know them to be tithers to the church, which Scotty is, I say to them, here's your formula. Just put it in your head. 10% tithe. 10% minimum into this family accumulation later. Minimum. And if you got some catching up to do, you got to do more than that. In order to do a good job for you now, this took me about, if I'm in front of a prospect, this would take me 6, 7, 8 minutes at most. In order to do a good job for you now, here's what I need to know. How much can you set aside to put in to this family accumulation layer? Now, I'm recommending 10% of 90. That's how much? 9,000. I had one guy ask me one time, do I have to tithe on the gross or the net? I said, you want to be blessed on the gross or on the net? I've had people say, is that 10% savings of the gross or the net? So if we get the net, this is 10% of gross going in there. You got money going into taxes, you got money going into Social Security, you got money going into emergency savings, and you got 10% going in this financial layer. We have sound principles for getting out of debt, be in a hurry to get out of debt, never borrow what depreciates, pay all bills when they're due, negotiate and pay cash. Here's our budget recommendation, but most companies have a good budget. But certain people, 60 to 90, up to 150,000 of gross income, they need a budget. Is that right? And I don't know about you, but what I found out is a lot of these young people with children, they fill out the budget, and they say, well, I'll tell you what, it shows here we got $200 left at the end of every month. But we do not have $200 left. We're always way behind. So we got something. Well, did you put Starbucks in there? No, I forgot Starbucks. Did you put this in there? Did you put that in there? So you help them fill out this budget, and then you help them see you got to save first and spend last. That's why in our budget, we have up here gross income, Social Security, savings first, then the budget. Savings comes first, then the budget. Because we want to build, we want to burn in. You save first and spend last. You buy, you sell. I'm sorry, you sell with what you own. All my life, I have sold with what I own. When I was 27, 28 years old, I was married, had a couple of children. I had the Gary Kinder Financial House. And that's where this really came from, the Gary Kinder, my financial house. And I would show people, this is what I own. Now let me show you what I've done for my family. And I'd turn the page and say, now there's the life insurance I own. Notice the yellow is group insurance. Notice the red is Social Security. Notice the blue is my own personal life insurance. Now fast forward when those two kids are 18. One 18, one 19. Fast forward when they're up there 18, 19 years old. The yellow's still there, but can't help me with their education. The red is gone temporarily until out at retirement. The blue, look what the blue's worth. I can reach in there and borrow that out. How much? How? Tax what? Tax free. Pay it back after they get out of college. Now flip forward all the way to retirement. Notice the yellow is gone. The red reappears as a Social Security income, but look at the blue. Look at the blue. Now, I'm out there at the other end. There's all the annuities that I own personally. Non-qualified and qualified. There's all of the life insurance that I own personally. This does not include business life insurance that Jack and I have. Here is our personal life insurance that I own. Here's the annuities I have on my wife. Here's the annuity we have in a charitable trust. Here's the life insurance that I have paid up on me. Here's the life insurance I have paid up on my wife. Now we got 3 second to dies. If you add all that up, that cash value today is just short of $4 million, just in life insurance and annuities. That's the blue. That's the blue. The face amount is $6 million. That's the blue. Now, that's all going to come in one last time. Tax free. You sell with what you own. Do you own enough permanent life insurance? You sell with what you own. Hard to dispatch that which you do not have. That, too, is biblical. When I graduated from college, I had a guy that was at the graduation ceremony. He happened to be a friend of Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. He was from the same, they were from the same hometown. But he got all done. And he said, let me leave you with this little prayer. He said, as I leave you with this little prayer, he said, let me ask you this question. And he asked this college students there, I was a senior graduating. He said, did you ever hear the prayer? Now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I die before I wake, pray the Lord my soul to take. He said, how many of you have ever heard that? Everybody raised their hands. How many of you here have ever? Everybody raises their hands. He said, how many of you know the second verse? How many here know the second verse? If I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. But if I die before tonight, I pray the Lord my work's all right. And that's a prayer you ought to say every morning as you get up, that your work's all right, because you got in your hands people who desperately need your financial advice. You are doing work of noble note. Go at it with every gut in your body. Follow the process. Sell what you own. And God bless you, everyone. And I hope this will help you not only the balance of this year, but throughout a career in this great industry and in this great country. Thank you very much.